where the news comes to talk. It's the Roundtable. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning.
On the Roundtable this morning, let's say good morning to Christy Blatchford from the National Post, Jerry Agar, host of The Jerry Agar Show, 9 to noon. Amanda Galbraith with Navigator Communications and former speechwriter to the Prime Minister, Michael Tobe. Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday.
Good morning.
It's a sweet, sweet Friday.
It's going to be one of those humdingers, and it's going
to
be exciting.
Dear God.
Yes.
I can't criticize because I use old-fashioned expressions all the time, but sure. Any guy who says humdingers.
What is
I mean,
a humdinger?
A humdinger is just, it's going to be, it's like
translate old for me.
Yeah.
It's like a kick in the pants. Think of it that way.
No, it's just, it's going to be a doozy.
A doozy. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a little old-fashioned, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
But you just think he should be wearing a bow tie and a double-striped jacket when he says that.
Little hat.
Have a piano on the side.
All right. Hard to know where to begin, but how about we start with residents in Don Mills are upset because the city is creating a temporary homeless shelter in an arena that is not going to be used during the summer, and it is close to, as one complaining resident said, a very trendy and lovely shopping mall.
Let's face it, you know, you don't want to ever stereotype any group, but these, you know, it is known that homeless people have a tendency to have addiction problems. Not all of them, but many of them. And to put them in an area in the city that is really isolated from a lot of any resources that they're going to need other than this hockey arena, they've got no programs in place for these people. So where are they going to hang out? What are they going to do all day?
Okay, that's probably her strongest argument, because the others were that there were a lot of parks and schools and seniors' residents, and apparently they didn't want to see homeless people. Amanda, you used to work in the mayor's office.
Yeah, I mean, there's three things that bug me about this story. First of all, the argument that people with addiction are predominantly homeless is ridiculous. I hate to break it to the poor lady, people of Don Mills, but I bet you there's quite a few people addicted to opioids and alcohol and lots of things that function in your community every day. So this is not going to be a new influx. Two,
she didn't say that addicts are homeless. She said a lot of homeless are addicts.
Sure, and a lot of normal people that function every day in society are also addicts, but they hide it better. And they function
well,
just fine.
Well, that's what she's looking for.
Well, but but the second point is that 40% of the city's homeless shelter system is now refugees. So there's a huge growth and influx in this system that we cannot handle because the federal government has mishandled the refugee program, and now the city's got to deal with it. And this is what's happening, is we have overcrowding. And then the third point is no one's being shipped during tourist season. Bottom line is they need more space. It's an arena, and we have a long history in the city of never refusing to open a homeless shelter, no matter what the community is. And I frankly think people need to be integrated. People need to see this stuff. It's part of everyday life. And if you're shopping at, you know, Whole Foods or whatever, and you happen to run across, like you know, Fiddle-Dee-Dee, I'm sure you'll survive as you keep walking.
So. Fiddle-Dee-Dee. See, you do know old phrases.
You ask what a humdinger is? Yes. Fiddle-Dee-Dee?
Wowza!
I feel like we should be playing croquet while
that's
we do
this. That's Gone with the Wind. It's one of my favorite quotes, Scarlett.
I lift my
so
pinky.
Then recently we saw a report about living next to a homeless shelter, and even a guy from the social housing organization in this city was complaining about having to come in the morning and clean up needles and human feces. And that's what you think people should see and have to deal with.
I live less than two doors down from a supervised injection site. My condo's fine. It came in after I moved there. It is perfectly fine. Everyone is very friendly. This is a reality of living in a big city, and you can't ghettoize these people. I'm sorry. I think it's awful. And the fact the argument is there's a shopping mall, like heaven forbid.
I think there's a Whole Foods there.
There's a Whole Foods.
Oh, and the Whole Foods. There we go.
You remember you mentioned that earlier.
You know, if I may, in this woman's defense and in defense of the people who live there,
exactly.
This is not, you know, a small laughing matter. And I don't think it's an ordinary NIMBY thing. I mean, I lived downtown for 22 years right behind a shelter. I'm all for homeless people. I don't mean for them, but I mean, I believe in helping them. I don't believe these particular shelters this sort of thing does, but I think these are legitimate opinions to have, to not want the character of your neighborhood changed. And you know, I remember, you know, somebody in my old neighborhood at College in Spadina once attempted to build a house that was slightly too tall for the neighbors, and people were in a frigging uprage because it's changing the character of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
But as Robert Turner says, how come when you flip that argument on its side and say, well, bringing in, busing in, let us not forget, they are busing the homeless people from the downtown up to Don Mills. It's insane.
Yeah, look, we shouldn't be terribly shocked by this at all, because most people in that situation would have said the same thing as that woman or worse. And that's unfortunately just the way people react to something that changes the perspective or the environment of their neighborhood. So I get that. The only thing that worries me about this, and I agree with most of Amanda's points on that as well, especially because they got to be put somewhere, there is a line in these flyers which directly said, how does this get approved without our knowledge? That's the only thing. Yeah, that's the only thing that makes me wonder here. Was this properly discussed in the area?
It goes through council.
Well, I agree. But evidently, there were a lot of people who either in their usual fashion missed it or they weren't aware of it.
Yeah.
So the question is, how emphatic was it actually produced? Was it just a minor thing that was on a list and they missed it? Or was there a big campaign? That's the only thing I wonder about.
Anybody looked at a city hall or a city council agenda in the last decade will know that they are, you know, five doorsteps stacked one on the other.
That's
and unless
right.
you're
yeah.
an acute observer of city council and you know something like this is coming, you're not going to pay attention
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
Students at three Toronto high schools, perhaps more, will be walking out of class today at 1 p.m., so they'll be done for the day when they stage their protest. They say that this province hasn't gone far enough, and there needs to be more of a framework for teachers and staff who behave inappropriately with a sexual context. Are we buying, Jerry, is this spring marching season, or do you think the kids actually have this in their hearts?
Well, I would do the marching in spring if I were them, so I don't blame them for that. But the thing is, we were talking earlier this week about our amazement that it took till 2018 for somebody to decide that you should fire a teacher if they sexually molest a student. So maybe the students actually are pointing out that the system is just way behind, not just today, they're way behind common sense. I mean, I think in the 1500s they could figure this out.
I think. Also, though, what they're calling for is a broadening of measures, which would also see teachers who used inappropriate language, in other words, whose sins were only verbal, also be subjected to more severe punishment. And, look, there's no question, I think that teachers and the College of Teachers have not handled this issue well over the last number of years. I quite agree. There's no place and should be no place for a teacher who sexually abuses or misconducts himself or herself with young people. But there's also, there ought to be a greater concern for the protection of those who are accused. And often teachers who are accused are sent home and they get paid, but they are effectively disappeared and often not even told what the charges against them are. And I know in the current climate, it's unfashionable to care, but we should care. So I think the kids have got it backwards, actually.
So on a related theme, this is from the Australian Broadcasting Network, an activist who teaches about consent. And Deanne Carson insists that educating kids about consent can begin before they even understand anything.
We work from children from 3 years old. We work with parents from birth.
From birth?
Yeah, yeah. Just about how to set up a culture of consent in their home. So I'm going to change your nappy now. Is that okay? Of course, the baby's not going to respond. Yes, Mum, that's awesome. I'd love to have my nappy changed. But if you leave a space and wait for body language and wait to make eye contact, then you're letting that child know that their response matters.
Okay, as the father of five... As a father of five, here's my assessment of this. Okay? You need the child's permission for nothing. That said, what do you do for the child? Everything. Are we clear?
That's pretty much mine, too. And I only have one kid.
Okay, but Amanda, I'm also thinking this is one of those people who sleeps, breathes, eats this one file. And so, of course, they take it to sort of, you know, the veganism of consent.
Veganism of consent. Yeah, listen, I too laughed and thought, I can't wait to hear what Jerry says about this topic.
he started pointing at himself.
Yeah, I know, he was very excited for those who were watching on the live stream. So, yes, I do think there is, actually I was listening to a podcast and it was talking a little bit about teaching kids to rely on themselves. And one of the things is, as a parent, I'm not a parent, obviously I'm just an aunt. If your kid is going to go do something and you're going to do something and say, hey, what do you think about this? And take their advice. Sometimes maybe that works or that doesn't.
Sure.
And just sort of teaches them to kind kind of engaged. So I do agree, asking consent of a child, a baby, is a bit ridiculous. However, teaching a young person that they have power over themselves in a cultural fashion in your home makes sense. Maybe not at the age of like 1 month.
We need to redefine the word expert in society. We really do. I mean, honestly, how the ABC in Australia could actually bring this woman on. And I saw the actual clip. The clip is only about 26 seconds. You can see it on YouTube if you want. And the interviewer sits there with a stone face. Either she's roaring with laughter within and she can't present it outside, or I don't know, she's not paying attention. Because this comment needed to be blasted hard, not just the way Jerry did it, with anybody. It doesn't matter.
I think the culture of consent really should begin in the womb. So I don't. I think they're missing the boat.
Oh, do you now?
Yes.
Well, Tanya, we can ask the child whether he or she would like to be aborted, you mean?
Yes, that would be a good place to start.
All right.
Oh, boy, Jerry.
Moving on.
Tanya Granick Allen, speaking of family issues and conservatism, will be on the Jerry Agar show this morning. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to read her entire column, which was published in the National Post. But I do roll my eyes every time somebody's caught saying something that causes an uproar. They say, I wasn't feeling well and I was taking medication.
Yeah, no, look, I understand that. I mean, I read the whole thing, and obviously I have no idea what happened behind the scenes. I strongly doubt that she was muzzled and was unable to discuss certain things about her issues. Look, Andrew Lawton, who a lot of us know here, was actually allowed to go out and defend himself as best he could because he had to, and he realized that he was at risk if he didn't talk about the fact that he had suffered from mental illness and had issues.
Although
in the past,
too, made excuses.
Yeah, he did. Okay, that's fine. I agree with you. But unfortunately, you know, he has... And I've known him for years. He has suffered quite badly. Irrespective of that, I don't know what happened with Granick Allen behind the scenes. I have no idea. She's written her piece. She's made her statement. Whether it's true or not is really up to her to know and behind the scenes. And it'll be interesting to see what Jerry says with her, because I think she'll probably just repeat a lot of these themes. But again, she's frustrated, and she has a right to be frustrated, because look what happened to her.
Yeah, I have a feeling that no matter how she explains it, it's not going to change the mind of the people who are against her, but don't discount the number of people who follow her.
Correct.
She was a main speaker at that Ottawa March for Life yesterday. Mm-hmm. Which was not an insignificant gathering of people. So I think that's the dynamic of Tanya Granick Allen. She's not going to go away.
Thank you, everybody.
Catch the Roundtable. Round one at 7:45. Round two at 8:45. Weekday mornings on More in the Morning. In-depth radio. News Talk 1010.